stop persistence as our history is real. A strong will can shine like gold. Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and I'm thinking the other day about some of the memories I had about going uptown, and there've been Doug Harper, before he passed away, had a song called Remember When or Do You Remember, and it named a lot of the businesses Uptown Beckley. And then Agnes Keatley came out with a book called Uptown Girl, had a lot of pictures and little stories about shopping and what was taking place uptown. Mentioned places like George's, MB's, Hub and Vogue, Sportsman, Smokehouse, Columbia Grill, Ramey's, Lily's Men's Shop, Harry's, Grant's, and of course Murphy's was kind of the center of the area. It made me think of a few people that were kind of like staples of Beckley. One back in the 50s and 60s that I remember was a guy by the name of Harry Rogers, and they called him Tojo. That's the name he went by. And I don't know exactly how he got the name. One story I'd heard, there had been a prime minister of Japan, Hideki Tojo, who was the prime minister that initiated the attack on Pearl Harbor. That Tojo was later tried and hung in 1948. And some people said that Harry Rogers looked a little like Tojo from Japan, and that's how he got the nickname. He didn't seem to mind a nickname. That's what he usually went by. But you would see him around town, a very friendly person, and he was usually selling newspapers, Post Herald in the morning, Raleigh Register in the afternoon, and I'd heard that he delivered papers in the morning before people got up around the town area. He came from a family of Willie Hobart and Dorothy Rogers, and I think there was about 15 kids in that family. And Harry Tojo was a hustler. Besides the newspaper, you'd see him occasionally selling things like strawberries around town and always trying to make money. Occasionally, if there was a wreck or traffic would get snarled up, Tojo would jump in and try to direct traffic until the police got there. John Hodel, who was the editor of the Beckley newspaper, once told a story when the Beckley newspaper was on Prince Street, that Tojo, who had come into the newspaper offices sometimes to get the newspaper, and he would sell things to the staff. That's back when the staff was rather large. And one particular day he came in and he was selling apples, and everybody in the place bought an apple from him. Even the guy who took care of the outside of Beckley newspapers, who was kind of the custodian outside. And it ended up the apples that Tojo was selling came from the apple tree just outside of the newspaper office that actually belonged to the Beckley newspapers. So he was actually selling to people their own apples, I guess. And the editor, John Hodel, thought that was kind of funny. Tojo Rogers became pretty popular and famous in 1965. And the story was, on Easter morning, he was going to the bus terminal to deliver some newspapers. And there was a Duncan Catron building. They sold the Dodge and Plymouth cars. It was owned by Walter Duncan. And there was a car dealership was in the bottom, and there were apartments over top of the car dealership. The building was owned by Leslie and Bernard Carter, two brothers who had later set up the Carter Foundation, which has been very charitable for different programs throughout our area. And anyway, this, as the story went, Tojo had seen some heavy smoke coming from the Duncan Catron building, and he rushed upstairs and woke up the residents of the building, and there was actually 13 different residents that lived up there, and they were able to get out safely through his efforts. There were 11 cars damaged in the fire, and there was also an addition later. Some people said that he had actually woke up a couple of people, and that a lady by the name of Betty Poland, who lived up there, and T.C. Moorfield went around and were waking up people also. So all of them should be considered heroes as far as I'm concerned. But that happened in 1965. Every time you see him in town, he's always greet at you, smile at you, try to sell you a newspaper. And even in 1968, during the November elections, now remember, this is back when George Wallace, I think he got 3,000 votes in Raleigh County running for president. But Tojo got a couple write-in votes for a criminal judge. There were several people that were running for that office, but he did get a couple of votes. But the winner of that particular election was the incumbent Judge Harry McQuarrie. And later on, Tojo had moved to the Dunbar area, and where he got married. I know he was doing some janitorial work at that time, and I don't know whether he's still alive. This is 2022, and I'm not sure he's still alive or not. But he was quite a staple of downtown Beckley. Another one, if any you might remember, is a guy named Sherman Neal. And Sherman was born in Stanford in 1927, and he worked at Pinecrest, mainly in the kitchen area, for over 20 years. He was a World War II veteran, and he had a brother named Fred, and he would usually work at Pinecrest in the evenings. And when he wasn't working at Pinecrest, he would shine shoes uptown. And most of the time that he worked, he worked at Tim's Shoe Shop in the chairs outside. People would come by and get their shoes shined, and I think Tim's also might have cleaned hats too. Tim's was later sold to a guy named Tom Mutnick, and they changed Tim to Tom's Shoe Shop. It was right there beside a Frank Albanese store that some of you might remember. Later, Sherman, I think, finished his career. You know, shoes started changing. People started wearing athletic shoes and shoes that didn't need to be shined. And I think near the end of Sherman's shoe-shining career, he worked in the bottom of Beckley Hotel for Frank DeFlippus in that area. And I guess he was kind of like a contractor. People would come in, they would pay him, he would split the money with whoever owned the facility and keep the tips that he got. But he was a very jovial type person, always smiling, always laughing, telling stories, telling jokes, and it was really a pleasure to see. And I remember as kids, we would always go by to see Sherman when we were uptown. Now, I did one time get a shoe shine from him, and I watched him, and he would clean your shoes with soap and water while it's still on your foot. And then he would hit it with, usually by his own hands, or sometimes on a brush, he would put the shine, the polish on there, and then he would hit it with a shoe shine rag, and he was really good, could make that thing pop. Always talking. The whole time that he was doing all this, he was always talking. I'd heard once that he boxed when he was younger, but I'm not sure about that. But Sherman died in 1997, age of 71, and Such a pleasure. I enjoyed talking to Sherman all the time. And who could forget the little lady that worked for the Salvation Army? You would see her anytime you were uptown. You would see her walking around with a tambourine in her hand, trying to take up money for the Salvation Army in her uniform. And many, many years, Esta Blevins was her name, and some people called her Esty. But she was came from a family that had 7 brothers and 4 sisters. She worked for the Salvation Army for 73 years. And she had been married. Her husband Thomas died in 1952, and she was carried to Tamarine taking money. She was a bell ringer during Christmas, and you'd see her everywhere. And she'd come up and just kind of shake that tambourine and want you to put money into it. And she was a very loving person, sometimes would take your hand and kiss it. And her sister, she had practically raised, and it was a part of her life for most of the time. Her great-nephew, Curtis Francisco, described her as very good, took care of his grandmother while she was a child, and then the grandmother paid her back as she got older. She helped take care of Esty. He said that she would come over every Sunday to his grandmother's house, and every Sunday that he was there, she would introduce herself like she had never had met him. And it may have been a form of dementia, but it was he would tell her his name. And sometimes he and his grandmother would they would laugh a little bit, and she might ask him what his name was, and he might say Soupy Sills or Gordon Liddy or Curtis Mayfield or whatever. But he described her as a remarkable woman, a model human being for certain, and compassion for her was a way of life and a grand lesson for all of us to learn. And that was very true. But imagine working in the situation, and a lot of times this was out in the cold, taking up money, and 73 years is a long time. And the Salvation Army had a picture of her when you went into the building there, and hopefully with the new building that they're building, that they will have the picture there in her honor. But she was one you would always see uptown, regardless of. It didn't seem like she ever had a sick day until she got a little bit older. So she was 99 years old when she passed away. So something else. Around the county and area, there were characters, people that in pleasant ways. I remember when my brother ran a filling station over in Crab Orchard, there was a guy that drove a little motor scooter around. They called him Alligator. I didn't know what his name was, but he would always come by the filling station, and he was funny and seemed to enjoy life. And there was also a man named Mike that had worked for the railroad, was always catching rides with people. And he rode the railroad a lot after he retired. And I remember him because he always wore 4 watches on his left arm. If you'd ask him what time it was, he could tell you. He had a watch for each time zone. He could tell you what time it was in the Eastern time zone or the Pacific or the Mountain, whatever. But it was kind of different. Also uptown, you would see characters like Chris Clifford, who was there quite a bit. He was an interesting character. There was a man they called Shocky that walked around town with a camera and seemed to be taking pictures a lot. I don't know whether he actually had film in the camera, but he was always taking pictures, and you kind of wonder what he was doing with them. There was a Walter Neal that sometimes if you talked to him, he would talk to us kids, and he told us that he worked for the FBI. I doubt it, but it was fun stories that he would share with us. As you went around town, everybody probably saw somebody, these guys, Pop Bottle Pete and Buck Jackson. They would walk miles and miles daily and pick up pop bottles. Back then, you could sell pop bottles for 3 cents a piece, And these guys would walk any kind of weather. You'd see them miles from Beckley or in town. And then they would also collect hubcaps that would fall off of cars, be on the side of the road. And so they kind of did their way. It was kind of their devotion to the litter control also. Made a little bit of money. There were other people you might see. There was one guy who had some type of disorder that kind of swayed back and forth. Very friendly fellow. And some people called him Tilt or had a nickname there. But when you talked to him, he was a very enjoyable person. Out the way I live, there was a lady that I was real friends with, and her name was Jackie Hera. And Jackie walked everywhere. I don't think she ever had a driver's license, and worked and cleaned houses for people in town. She would sometimes be around the post office, and if she was going a certain way, if somebody came in, she might catch a ride with them. I know that I gave her a ride for years on a Thursday of the week. She was cleaning a house right off Johnstown Road, and she would always be waiting in the same place. On that Thursday morning, 6:30 in the morning, she would be there. And I don't know how she got home, but she would be waiting on me, rain, sleet, hail, or snow. She was always there. And Jackie was a good friend. And every Christmas, she would buy me a little Christmas present, might be a coffee cup or something, in her appreciation for giving her a ride. But she was... and I think Jackie lived to be in her 90s, and you could be rich if you had a dollar for every mile that she put on. But those are just a few people that come to mind, and I'm sure that there are others that you think about. It takes a lot of different people to make the world go round. Those are stories. If you have a story you would like to be on the show, we'd love to have you. And just email me at awbennett50@gmail.com. And we'll get you on here. Just remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. Until next time, God bless you.
Do you remember the way it used to be? Strolling down Main and Neville streets. Shops and diners and picture shows. Stores for shoes and stores for clothes. Greeted everyone and we knew no strangers. Traffic and pigeons were the biggest dangers. People swarmed around like a big beehive. It was a place to be between 9 and 5. Grants and Murphys were wonderlands. Everything from pets to frying pans. The candy counter, model cars and underwear. Work clothes, records and stuff for your hair. Conway, Beckley, or Foster Hardware, you could find all you needed for any repair. Klaus was a place for office supplies, and Lincoln known for pocket knives. The George's MB's the hub and bow. You could dress the finest lady from head to toe. From Lily's Pains and Silver Grand, you could make a grand prince of a common man. Tip Top of Freddy's for burgers and fries. The Greyhound Station was a place for pies. The Cozy Corner and the Sportsman Grill. For a buck and a half you could eat your fill. I remember the golden days of the streets. Window displays and cops on the beat. Onyx rolled out at 9 a.m. And at 5 o'clock they rolled them up again. It was a model for a small town USA. Crafted in a scheme of the American way. The hub of commerce and social life. It was a place to be between 9 and 5. Saturday matinee was a great event. Double feature at the Lyric. 25 cents, 35 at the Beckley. Even though it was more. They had fatter seats and less gum on the floor. Tin roof sundaes from White Cross Pharmacy. Cream puffs and brownies from Quality Pastry. Virgil's newsstand was a regular sight. We scanned all the comics, but we rarely bought. Then came the days of shopping malls. Superstores that had it all. Downtown life soon dried up. And one by one the doors were shut. I hope one day it will all turn around. shops and restaurants will move back down. We'll have an uptown once again. I'm looking forward to the day the streets bustle again. I remember the golden days of the streets, window displays and cops on the beat. Awnings rolled out at 9 a.m. and at 5 o'clock they rolled them up again. It was a model for a small town USA, crafted in the scheme of the American way. The hub of commerce and social life, it was a place to be between 9 and 5. It was a place to be between 9 and 5.